Sal agreed, and saying goodbye to Tony, he went out to his rental car and, entering the address into the car's navigation system, he drove out to Sean's house. 15 minutes later, he was looking at two burned-out trailer shells in what was definitely one of the poorest trailer parks in town.
"Can I help you?"
asked an old lady, coming up to him as he stood there looking at the ruins.
"How long ago did this happen?"
Sal asked her.
"Oh, it must be 6 weeks ago now," she told him.
"And they still haven't cleared this out?"
"Well, the police were investigating it as arson up until a week ago. Turns out it was just a problem with some dogs chewing on the gas lines or something."
She shook her head.
"Those coyotes are getting to be more of a problem every year."
"Oh," Sal nodded. Apparently someone had already tried to get this kid a couple of times now.
"Was anybody hurt?"
"Oh, no. No one was living in either house, though."
The lady sighed and shook her head.
"Sampson, the man who lived in that one, was found murdered over near Sparks, and Louise, poor Sean's mother, has been missing as well."
"What about Sean?" Sal prompted.
"Well, I haven't seen him since the fire. He was here with his fiancée a few days before, but I know he was busy with college and all. I think he'd been hoping to move back here, but I guess he's just living at school."
She looked up at Sal.
"Are you a friend of his?"
Sal shook his head no.
"Actually, I was hoping to talk to Sampson," Sal lied to her. "I had no idea that he had been killed.
Thank you for your time, Mrs.—
Brentley, Mrs. Brentley. And you are?"
"Miles," Sal lied.
"Miles Davis."
"Oh, like the trumpet player?"
Sal rolled his eyes. Just his luck he'd find a jazz fan in a place like this.
"Yeah, I guess. Well, thank you, Mrs. Brentley. I need to go."
And with that, Sal extracted himself and returned to his car. Harkins hadn't told him about this. But then, Sal was starting to suspect that Harkins hadn't told him a lot of things.
Guild Workshop.
Sean was rather pleased with himself. He'd laid down all of the base spells on the plate, now that it was prepared for enchanting. With that finished, he'd locked everything into place so the spells wouldn't degrade between now and when he got to work on it again. He probably could have used that power to do even more work on the plate and just left things to sit on their own, if his calculations were correct. It would let him finish in 9 days rather than 14. But all of the books warned against that, because the spells would start to unravel on their own after only 9 or 10 hours. So if you missed the next day, or were even late, all of your work would be lost. Sean thought that, in the first few days of enchanting, that was probably a risk normally worth taking. But this was his first major project, so he wanted to be sure he was doing the sealing spell properly.
"How's it going?"
Dalen asked, coming into the room with a box.
"It's going great," Sean said and stretched. He really needed to go out and run for a while tonight. All of this sitting down and spell casting was definitely giving him a lot of pent-up energy.
"What's in the box?" he asked.
"Oh, that wire crank assembly you wanted?"
Dalen smiled.
"I improved it."
"Improved it? How?"
Sean asked, a little worried.
"I got rid of the crank and put a low-speed, high-torque motor on it with a foot switch."
"A foot switch?"
Dalen nodded.
"Yeah, this way it leaves your hands free. You can control the speed, even put it in reverse if you need to."
"Huh. That does sound pretty sweet." He smiled. "Thanks, hon."
"No problem. Still trying to figure out a better way to move items onto the plate and off of it than just using a couple of sticks."
Dalen wrinkled her nose at the thought of that.
"I was thinking maybe a wooden wheel with the items clipped to it, like you see them do with orders at a diner. But I want a better feed mechanism than just people putting them on and taking them off."
"Why?"
Sean was curious as to why she felt so strongly about that.
"Because if somebody screws up, You're the one who's going to get hurt, that's why. And then Rox is going to blame me for not doing it right in the first place.
Sean sighed. Oh, she won't do that, Day.
Sure she will. Have you seen her do those puppy dog eyes of hers? I didn't think cats knew how. Then she makes her upper lip tremble, and you feel like you just murdered somebody's kitten.
Sean couldn't help himself. He started laughing.
It's not fair that she can manipulate us all so easily. Cats are evil, I tell you.
Hey, I'm a cat, Sean reminded her between laughs.
And your point is?
Dalen asked.
She knows she probably can't win on strength against me, so she just cheats,
she grumbled.
I almost feel sorry for Joe, Sean snickered. You're both way stronger than she is.
Joe just bribes you with back rubs and massages and such.
Dalen looked around and lowered her voice.
She can damn near make Rox roll over and beg.
And I'll get you to that point one of these days as well, Day, dear,
Jolene said, coming into the room. Dalen turned a rather bright red at that.
Where's Rox? Sean asked.
Watching Sarah for Roberta. Ready for dinner?
Sean nodded.
Yeah, let's go.
Standing up, he put the plate back in its box for now, and followed the girls out of the room.
Roll over and beg indeed, Sean snickered.
Jolene laughed.
Like you don't, dear. I got you trained weeks ago.
Sean harumphed with a smile.
I only do sit up and beg, and you know it.
Well, then I guess it's time for a new trick. Right, Day?
It was laid out. And Sean was running through the fields to the east of the guild, enjoying it immensely as he and his lion just let go and ran. Roxy was, of course, running circles around him half the time, but he really didn't care. It just felt good to be outside and running free across the ground. He hadn't been out running as a lion in weeks. Honestly, he was surprised that his lion hadn't been bugging him about it. He felt a few sheepish thoughts from that side of his psyche. Apparently, he wasn't the only one who'd been caught up in everything that was going on.
What was that?
Roxy growled, pivoting to face back towards the grounds that the guild was on.
What was what?
Sean asked, and spinning around, he looked back towards the grounds as well.
I thought I heard something,
Roxy said. And then, just like that, she was off like a flash. Sighing, Sean took off after her. He'd never catch up with her, but the whole point of being out here was to stretch out his muscles and get some exercise. When he got back to the compound, the first thing he noticed was that the gates had been rammed by a truck and were now open. The second was the guy Roxy was disemboweling. Swearing, Sean slowed down to get an idea of just what was going on. He could see a skirmish line of men with semi-automatic rifles were moving forward into the compound. From the way one of the Lycan defenders started screaming when they were shot, Sean realized immediately that they were using silver bullets. Swearing, he charged towards the middle of the skirmish line, coming up on the men from behind. Someone must have heard something or seen him, as the man he was running for started to turn around. But Sean got to him first, and, ripping the man's head off with a swipe from his left paw, Sean turned to his right and attacked the next man in the skirmish line, batting the man with his massive paws twice, ripping him open from chin to groin. The man went limp then, and Sean ran over the body, letting his hind claws do some extra damage as he opened his mouth wide and then closed his jaws on the side of the next man, driving his fangs deep into the man and through the body armor he was wearing, as Sean shook him like a rag doll. It was then that Sean realized that the men he was attacking were all Lycans, werewolves, and that unless he did truly massive amounts of damage to them, they'd regenerate, eventually. Putting a paw on the body of the man he had his jaws in, he pinned him to the ground and ripped out a huge piece of his body, entrails and all. Dropping the dead body, Sean could feel that he was being shot now, and his silver shield had already soaked up enough power to start growing and solidifying. Sean moved on to attack the next man in line, who brought the gun around to try and shoot Sean in the mouth, as Sean roared loudly at him. Bringing the gun around, however, brought the silver in the magazine into the expanding shield, which converted them all instantly.
With so much excess power, the shield was now starting to deflect bullets. It also was heating up, as well as causing the silver in the magazines on the man's belt to heat up as they were converted. Enough so they started cooking off and setting the attacker on fire as Sean ripped his head off. By this point, the rest of the skirmish line in front of Sean had started to flee, running from their obvious deaths. Unfortunately for them, Roxy was coming at them from the other direction, now in her hybrid form and covered in blood that was quite obviously not her own. Somehow she'd gotten her hands on one of the rifles, and keeping her hands off the magazine, so she wouldn't change the silver bullets there, she was laying waste to all of the attackers around her with her well-developed shooting skills. Sean killed one more with an attack from the rear, then, spinning around, he went after the ones that were shooting him from behind, causing them to immediately scatter in all directions. That was when the mages attacked. They started off first with sleep and paralyzation spells, which of course had no effect on Sean, but he could feel them coming in as he called up his monitor program and shifted into hybrid form now himself, and then called up his offensive spell frame. Charging the mages, Sean sent a lightning bolt at the one in front, who dodged to the side, only to let the guy behind him take the hit. Claws out, Sean waded into the midst of them, casting lightning bolts between slashes with his hands and stomping or kicking whoever was within his reach, killing two of them immediately. As soon as they broke and ran for the gates, Sean turned towards the living quarters, where he saw the first body of somebody that he knew. Joyce was lying on the ground with several bullet wounds, dead. Growling loudly, Sean ran into the building and started immediately for Roberta's room and the girls. When he got there, the door had already been broken down, and there were two dead werewolves on the ground, both with their heads caved in. Looking up, he saw Daylan with a bloody bandage on her left arm, holding the recently repaired Maxwell in her right.
"Is everyone okay?" Sean growled.
"I got these two, but there may be more in the building," Daylan told him. "Roberta, Sarah, and Jolene are in the bedroom."
"Yell if you need anything," Sean growled, and then went back outside into the hallway as Roxy came running up.
"You're wounded,"
Roxy said, panting. "So are you," Sean growled.
"Most of them are retreating."
"Let's clear the living quarters, then the rest of the ground."
Roxy nodded, and they started going door to door. It took them 15 minutes to clear the building. The attackers they found by then were dead, but they came across several dead lycans, shot with silver bullets, and a couple of dead sorceresses, either killed by magic, physical violence, or by bullets as well. By the time they got out onto the rest of the grounds, none of the attackers were left. Only the dead remained behind.
"Gather up the bodies," Sean growled to Roxy. "Let's see if we can figure out who was behind this."
2 hours later, they had all of the bodies of the attackers lined up on one side of the first courtyard. 36 dead, 10 of which Sean had killed. The 5 on the skirmish line, then the 5 mages who had been unfortunate enough to attract Sean's attention. Roxy had killed the 1 magic user by the gate, and another 9 of the skirmishers. Daylan had accounted for the 2 that had attacked Roberta's room. Apparently Roberta and Jolene had been casting spells from the living room window, so those 2 had been sent up to stop them. The remaining 14 dead had been killed by various sorceresses, who had only been able to do so because their lycan partners had stood between them and the men trying to shoot them. Out of all of the dead, only the magic users that Sean and Roxy had killed had been human. All of the rest had been lycans.
"How many died?"
Sean asked Deanna in a soft voice as she came out to inspect the dead bodies.
8 of my sorceresses, 23 of our own lycans," Deanna told him, her features hard as she looked over the line of dead bodies.
"I'm sorry," Sean sighed. "This is all my fault."
"As much as I would like to find fault with you for what happened tonight, I don't think that I can. These are from the Ascendants. They are taking revenge on what we did to the Totis leader."
"How do you know?" Sean asked, surprised.
"We captured 2 of their mages," Deanna said. "I questioned them quite thoroughly. I will have someone bring their bodies out to add to these, so they can all be disposed of together.
Deanna sighed and looked at him.
We are at war now with the Council of the Ascendants. Yes, your bringing Preston here for us to deal with played a part in that. However, your presence here also played a part. We would not have survived tonight if you and yours had not been here. Their use of silver against us, and their willingness to sacrifice their lichens was as unexpected as their attack.
Why were they so willing to sacrifice them? Sean asked, looking at their bodies.
Because they believe that you are going to free them, so they figure they might as well start using them up before then,
Deanna said, shaking her head.
That's evil,
Deanna nodded.
The Council of the Ascendants has always been known for their lack of morals or compassion.
Especially where lichens are concerned,
Roxy growled.
Now that they know you are here, Deanna said, I'm afraid that they'll be back. It might be best for you to leave. I need to meet with the others. We need to discuss our options.
I have a better idea, Sean growled.
And what would that be?
Rox, get Daylan and meet me in the workroom. I'll meet you there after I get that box out of the van.
Oh, no. You're not doing that again,
Roxy growled.
Roxy,
Sean said, turning to look her in the eye.
I love you more than anything, but we are doing this, and you are helping. I have a responsibility to all of the lichens who died here today, and we are going to do what we can to keep this from happening again.
I'm not going to...
Rox, Sean said, lowering the pitch of his voice. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
Roxy looked at him, then, turning on her heel, she stomped off in search of Daylan.
Fucking lions,
she swore.
What are you going to do?
Deanna asked, looking concerned.
I'm going to make as many silver tags as I can before I either pass out from exhaustion or drop dead,
Sean told her.
Excuse me, please.
Once again, Sean was sitting in a chair in his hybrid form, without any clothing on or anything flammable within 10 feet of him. He had his enchantment program open, and his monitor program open. Only this time, instead of having Daylan lowering a rod of silver on a string, he had a spool full of silver hanging up above his head with a foot pedal under his right foot to control how fast it fed him silver. On his right side was a table with rows of silver tags on it. On his left side was a table with stacks of lichen collars. The girls would push the tables after he enchanted each group of tags to bring more into his reach. While they were doing that, he'd move to the collars, which were stacked in piles of 5, to burn off the excess energy. Taking a moment to turn off the tag's encryption program, he made the same 2 changes as the last time, and then took another moment to check just where everything was laid out, reaching around himself with his hands to be sure it was all within reach.
You haven't started, have you?
Roberta asked, coming into the room in a rush.
No, Sean said, looking up at her. What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong, but I thought you might want this.
Roberta came over to him, and Sean could see she was carrying a 10-inch-tall metal owl that looked to be fairly heavy.
What's that? Sean asked.
A battery,
Roberta grinned.
I swiped it out of the gate mechanism that protects us against blast spells.
Won't that be missed?
Roxy asked.
Have you seen the gates? Roberta snorted. I told them we needed something heavier, but no one thought someone would ram a big-ass truck through them.
Sean took the owl from her and checked it with his program. Sure enough, it was a battery all right, and it was more than 4 times the size of the ones he'd been planning on making.
At least it's not silver,
Sean said, and after he tarred a copy of it, he put it on the floor and put his left foot on it.
This is not going to be easy, he grumbled. Stand back. It's liable to get hot in here.
Taking one last look around, he blew a kiss to Roxy, who was still scowling at him. Then, pushing his foot down, he started to feed the silver into his shield,
This time he didn't try to get ahead of himself and make too many, doing just one at a time, then dumping the extra energy into the battery when it came back. When the battery was half full, he stopped feeding himself silver and used the energy in the battery to make the next two tags, then went back to using silver to power the reaction. When all the tags within reach had been enchanted, Sean switched over to the lichen collars, while Roxy pushed the table forward. Switching to the collars threw him off for a moment. They required a lot less energy. Fortunately, having them in stacks of five helped. But after doing the single enchanting on the tags, he wasn't all that comfortable with multiples, especially as it had gotten him in so much trouble last time. Switching back to the tags, after the next batch was within reach, Sean unpacked the spell into each of them once more, before running out of tags within reach on the table again. Three more times they moved the table, and then suddenly he was out of tags to enchant. Going back to the collars, he did all of the ones he could reach. He ran out of silver before he ran out of collars, surprisingly. He enchanted another six stacks, just using what was in the battery at that point. Then he just dropped everything and looked around the room. Roxy was still glaring at him. Daylin was watching him carefully. Jolene and Roberta were both sitting in chairs, leaning against the wall and sound asleep.
"Done?" Roxy growled.
"Two things."
Sean sighed as he set the program and the tag back to normal and turned the encryption back on.
"What?"
"A hug and a kiss."
He smiled crookedly at her.
"And why is everything moving?"
Daylin looked at Roxy as Sean keeled over and started snoring.
"If you forgive him, I promise never to hold you down and shave you bald again."
Roxy looked at Daylin a bit askance.
"Just when did you ever do that?"
"In about 5 minutes from now if you don't let it go."
Daylin smiled and held up a pair of electric shears, turning them on. Roxy looked at Daylin, and then back at Sean, who was completely out of it.
"Let's pack all this up first," Roxy sighed. "I think he did about 500 tags.
417, Daylin said. "He made it through an entire box, plus 310 collars."
Roxy shook her head again, looking at him.
"He's such a dick sometimes."
"Oh, come off it. You love it when he tells you what to do."
Daylin laughed, and then laughed even louder as Roxy's facial fur bushed out in a blush as she started quickly stacking the tags back in their box. Alliances.
"What's this?"
Dana asked as Roberta handed her a very heavy box. 80 of those lichen collars, along with 80 of the tag device that protects lichens from silver. This is what Sean's been making in the workshop all night and all morning."
"Where is he?"
Deanna said, looking at Roberta, who was only being accompanied by Jolene.
"He's asleep."
"More like passed out,"
Jolene added.
"It's a lot of work to do that much enchanting, even with the special methods he's developed. I don't think he's going to be waking up anytime soon either."
"Are you sure he'll be okay with you giving me this?"
Deanna asked, looking at Jolene. Jolene smiled.
"We're his wives. We get to do whatever we want with his stuff. One of the perks."
"You mean you're his wife," Roberta said.
"I'm not."
"Keep thinking that,"
Jolene laughed and winked at Roberta.
"You're sure about this?"
Deanna asked, before Roberta could respond to Jolene's jibe. Jolene nodded.
"It's the whole reason he made them. If the Ascendants come back now, your lichen boyfriends and helpers will be able to give them one hell of a surprise."
Setting the box down on her desk, Deanna stepped forward and gave Jolene a hug.
"Thank you. And make sure to thank Sean for me when he awakens."
Turning to Roberta, she gave her a hug too.
"I expect you to do the same."
Deanna smiled.
"What? Trying to get rid of me?"
Roberta laughed.
"With this many collars and tags,"
Deanna motioned towards the box,
"we'll have more than enough to protect everybody. Do you want any of the leftover ones back?"
Jolene shook her head.
"You'll probably need them eventually." What are your plans now?
Now would probably be a good time for us to leave, Jolene sighed. They know Sean's here, and a large part of our strategy has always been to not stay anywhere once they know of us being there.
Are you sure? With these tags of yours, we can easily stand against the Ascendants now.
But it will draw others as well if he remains here, Deanna, Roberta sighed. As much as I want him to stay, Jolene and the others have a point. They're not even waiting for him to wake up. They've already carried him out to their van.
Well, I won't ask where you're going, but you're always welcome here, no matter what.
Thanks, Deanna.
Jolene smiled and gave her a hug. Then turning, she left the room.
You know, Roberta,
Deanna said, as Roberta turned to follow Jolene.
Sooner or later, that boy is going to make you his.
Roberta sighed and patted her belly.
He already has, Mother. He already has.
You saw him where?
Sal said into the phone.
At the Sorceress Guild compound out by Hidden Valley, Harkins said.
When?
Last night, when we attacked them.
You attacked the sorceresses? Sal was surprised by that. He would have thought that they'd be getting ready for an attack like the one Gradatim had suffered.
We have some unfinished business with them. Unfortunately, Valens was there, and it didn't go as well as we had planned. But now that we know where he is...
Harkins trailed off. Sal sighed.
He isn't there now. You should have called me sooner. What do you mean he isn't there now?
This kid keeps moving. Every time he's been found so far, he'd moved off to someplace new. He's not taking any chances.
He'd abandon the sorceresses just like that? Harkins said, surprised.
It's not his fight. You didn't attack because he was there. And if he stays there, I'm sure the other councils will go after him as well. No. His being there simply draws fire. His best bet is to move on.
Damn, Harkins swore. I didn't consider that. I guess I better call off tonight's attack.
That would be your call, Sal said. Well, I need to get back to looking for him. At least I know of another place he isn't. Goodbye.
And he hung up the phone.
Sal shook his head and sighed. If only Harkins had bothered to call him last night, he could have staked out the place and maybe gotten an eyeball on the kid when he moved and tracked him to wherever he went next. It had taken him a couple of days, but Sal had managed to figure out who a couple of Sean's high school friends were after finding a copy of his high school yearbook online and doing a few searches. The biggest problem he had with that, however, was 3 years after high school, what was the likelihood that they were still friends? Or that he was going to visit his friends while in the middle of what was obviously now a war? The more Sal learned, the more he realized that the folks over at the Council of Ascendants had reason to fear Sean. He'd put a serious smackdown on the Council of Gradatim, and several members of their leadership were now dead or missing, along with all of their lichens. The only thing Sal couldn't understand is why Sean went after them before going after the Ascendants, who had given him a lot more to be angry about. From what he'd been starting to pick up from some of the other coven members that Tony had turned him onto, Sean had even helped the gals over at the Sorcerer's Guild put the smackdown on one of Harkins' biggest allies, which no doubt had been what inspired last night's attack. Without much in the way of clues to Sean's present location, Sal had driven by the homes of Sean's friends, one of which was obviously now unoccupied in a rather nice part of town. Another one appeared to no longer have the young man he was looking for living at it. The third one's house he couldn't even find. But two of them he found had business connections, and today he was going to stop by the first. Stephen Bryson apparently worked at his family's automotive shop. Sal had the address, and as he drove by the place, he was impressed by the size of the operation. Combined with the rather nice house he'd seen, apparently the Brysons did okay. That made Sal wonder why Sean, who apparently was dirt poor, was friends with a rich kid.
That didn't make a lot of sense to Sal, but maybe things were different now from when he had grown up. Back then, rich kids most definitely did not hang around with any poor kids. Parking the car on the street, he walked over to the shop. The place had a fairly large front showroom with a large counter and a number of racks with items for sale on them, with the usual display of tires on the back wall. Going inside, he walked up to the counter. Maybe if he played his cards right, he could get a tour of the place.
"Can I help you, sir?"
the gal behind the counter asked him.
"Yes. Do I have a rate schedule I can look at?"
She handed him a flyer.
"Is this for an insurance claim, or will you be paying for it?"
"I'll be paying," he said, and she pointed to the bottom of the second page as he opened the flyer to look inside.
"Our rates are there, but for anything beyond a standard tune-up or maintenance, you'll have to bring the vehicle in for an estimate. Our work is all based on standard hourly rates, but estimates are, of course, free."
Someone walked behind Sal as she was talking, and he smelled it almost instantly. Wolf. Glancing over his shoulder, he noticed a young man heading into the back, and he reeked of wolf. Whether he was a wolf or had been in the company of one, it didn't matter. If there were wolves around here and he started asking questions about Sean, word would get back to him that a hyena was looking for him. That would destroy any chance of setting up any kind of ambush to take the kid alive. Then again, maybe that was why this Bryson kid had been interested in Sean. Maybe the kid was a wolf. Maybe the whole family was wolves. Sal knew that there were at least two large packs that called the area home. A lot of the free wolves had come out west to run in the high Sierras where there weren't many people living, and settled here. He didn't doubt that by now, more than a few of them had become quite successful. So it just might be that the local packs knew what Sean's father had been up to, and had taken an interest in Sean, just in case Sean decided on following in his father's footsteps. Sal's eyes narrowed a little as he pursued that thought a moment. It would even explain just how the Gesh was removed and how Sean was able to pursue his magical studies.
"Sir?"
the woman behind the counter asked.
"Oh, sorry."
Sal apologized.
"Thanks for your time. I need to get going."
Turning around, he put the flyer in his pocket and headed for the exit. If the local wolf packs were involved, that would mean Sean had a lot more help than Harkins realized. Staying at the Sorcerer's Guild even made sense. They'd been loosely allied with the Lycans for centuries now. Hell, even he'd be welcome there. Heading back to his car, Sal decided that he needed to find out just how large and how powerful the local wolf clans were. This would definitely complicate his plans.
Take Me Down. Sean yawned and stretched and looked up at the ceiling, then blinked. This wasn't Roberta's room. Looking down in the dim light, Roxy was sprawled across his chest, sound asleep. So she'd forgiven him, apparently. Sitting up slowly, he eased her off of him as she grumbled in her sleep. Jolene and Dalen were both together on his left side, surprisingly. So moving off to the right, he sat up and started to wonder where the bathroom was when he realized just exactly where they were. They were back in the bunker. Sniffing the air, he could still smell a few faint burnt smells from the stuff that had been destroyed when they'd evacuated the last time. He could also smell cleaning products and several wolves that he recognized faintly. Standing up slowly, he left the bedroom. They were in one next to the one they'd used last time, and he quickly made his way to the bathroom. After relieving himself, Sean shifted back to his human form and decided to deal with the next most pressing thing on his mind. Food. Sean recognized Stew from what had been Beta Team 3, sitting at the table and watching a flat panel display as he entered the kitchen.
"I see you're up," Stew said, giving him a nod.
"Is there any food in the fridge? And what am I doing here?" Sean said, keeping his priorities straight.
"The fridge is packed, the microwave over there works, and your wives agreed that staying at the guild was too inviting a target, now that people had seen you there."
Sean nodded
as he opened the fridge and started pulling out food and stacking it on the table. Grabbing something to drink, he sat down and just started stuffing lunch meats and cheese into his mouth. He'd see about nuking something more substantial once the initial edge was off.
"What are you doing?"
Sean asked Stu between bites.
"We've got a pretty extensive perimeter detection system set up here now. Hidden cameras on all the approaches, pressure sensors, thermal sensors, microphones, you name it. Dalen had John come down here with us and wire the place last week."
"Day?" Sean blinked. Stu nodded, but his attention was on the flat panel display as he typed something on the keypad set up under it.
"She had us clean the place out. Wanted it prepped for any more lichens that might show up."
"What day is today?" Sean asked, looking around. There still wasn't a clock in the room, and someone had taken his watch off, along with the rest of his clothes. Now that he was no longer starving, Sean was starting to realize that he was buck naked.
"Monday, 5:43 in the morning."
"Ugh, there you are,"
Roxy said, stumbling into the room, still half asleep. Sean looked at her and smiled. Roxy didn't do mornings much better than he did, and other than a pair of panties, she wasn't wearing any clothes either. Sean was impressed that Stu only glanced up once, and then went back to looking at his panel.
"I got hungry," Sean said between bites, pulling Roxy over to sit on his lap as he continued to eat.
"Apparently," she sighed and leaned into him. "Cold."
"Yeah, you're naked."
"I got panties on. I'm not naked," she mumbled.
"Eat," Sean chuckled, and handed her a cold hot dog.
"Hey, this isn't cooked."
"Yeah, I didn't want to wait."
Getting back to her feet, Roxy went over to the refrigerator.
"Well, as long as I'm up, I might as well cook you something."
"Does this mean I'm forgiven?"
Sean asked.
"It was that or have that demented dwarf shave me,"
Roxy snorted.
"They can be downright evil when she wants to be."
"Look who's talking," Sean laughed.
"Yeah, well, I come by it naturally. I think she's self-taught."
Sean grinned at that.
"So did you give any tags to Deanna's people?"
Roxy nodded as she pulled some food out and went over to the stove.
"Yeah, we gave them 80. We also sent 90 over to Oak in the shop to make sure everyone was covered there, plus another 8 for the people here."
"How many does that leave us here?"
230 tags, 201 collars."
Roxy turned to him and blushed.
"I sent 9 tags and 9 collars to my dad by courier yesterday. I hope you don't mind."
Sean smiled and shook his head.
"Nah, family comes first. So how many of those things did I make?"
"You made all of the tags in the box. That was 417 and 310 of the collars."
Roxy stopped and pointed the spatula she was using at him.
"You were working for over 8 hours straight after being up all day and passed out from the stress and the strain and the lack of sleep. I'm not going to get on your case about it."
"Uh-huh,"
Sean grinned.
"But you need to stop letting your impulsiveness and your anger run away with you,"
Roxy finished and went back to cooking. Sean looked at Roxy as she stood there cooking in only her panties. He loved the way her ass looked, and in those panties, it seemed even more alluring. He smiled as he remembered all the times her butt in those track shorts she used to wear around campus had led to some rather impure fantasies back in his bedroom. And now? Now he had the real thing right there, and that beat any fantasy he'd ever had, hands down, because that gorgeous ass of hers was attached to an equally sexy, smart, and loving woman. Standing up, Sean walked over to Roxy and, putting his arms around her, he leaned into her.
"Somebody's excited,"
Roxy snickered as Sean's erection poked at her butt.
"Well, I'm not starving anymore."
"Well, at least not for food," Sean whispered and started to kiss down the side of her neck.
"Sean,"
Roxy giggled, tilting her head to the side for him.
"We have an audience."
"Stu, is that panel portable?"
Sean growled.
"Already leaving, sir,"
Stu said and left the room.
"Now, where were we?"
Sean asked, and sliding a hand down, relieved Roxy of her panties. Spreading her legs, Roxy turned off the stove and moved the pan out of the way.
I think a horny lion was about to spend a little time pleasing his equally horny little cheetah,
Roxy purred, sliding a hand down to tease at Roxy's sex. Sean was rather surprised to find out that she really was as horny as she claimed.
You weren't kidding, were you? Sean said, nuzzling her from behind and planting little love bites along her shoulder.
Like I told your lion, I dragged you back to my room for a reason.
Roxy giggled and started rubbing her butt up and down along his erection.
You just want me for my body, Sean chuckled.
And your money and your children,
Roxy agreed, bending over a bit more to reach down between her spread legs and guide him into her body.
What about this? Sean growled and drove his hips forward suddenly.
Oh, yes,
Roxy groaned, bracing her hands against the wall over the stove.
Definitely that. Lots of that.
Grabbing her hips with his hands, Sean started to give her just that. Roxy was definitely a very physical and athletic lover, and she started bucking back against him almost immediately. Letting go of her hips, he slid his hands up higher and bending forward until his chest pressed into her back, he slid his arms around her body, then, crossing his arms to hold her tight, he moved his hands up to capture her bouncing breasts as he continued to pummel her from behind with his body. Roxy arched her back further, bringing her body a little close to the still warm grill, enjoying the heat of it radiating up against her belly, as her mate took her hard from behind. She could hear him growling softly in her ears as his arms wrapped around her, imprisoning her before him as his body pressed down into hers. When his hands grabbed her breasts and started to knead and massage them, she went off like a firecracker under him, her body bucking back against his as she moaned her need for him. But he was unrelenting and continued his assault, his fingers finding her nipples and pinching them hard, taking her breath away as she pressed harder against the wall, her head hanging down between her arms as she tried to catch her breath, her mate's demanding motions driving the breath from her as he held on tighter, and his actions began to take on a more demanding and frenzied behavior.
Babies, huh?
Sean grunted in her ear, and then, tipping his head down, he bit the side of her neck, where it joined her body, and growling, he hit his peak, emptying himself into her body. Roxy's head came up as he seized her neck in a mating bite, his words echoing through her head, causing her to go off again. Pushing back hard against him, she felt the heat of him pouring into her as she cried out loudly. Sean held on to Roxy with all of his strength, surprised at just how loud she'd cried out as she'd hit her peak, her body grinding back against his as she moaned and panted rather loudly. When he finally wound down, he noticed she was purring very softly, only one hand bracing her against the wall as the other rubbed her belly slowly. Licking at the teeth marks he'd left on her neck, he thought about that a moment. Maybe she hadn't been kidding when she'd complained to him about getting Roberta pregnant first.
You really do want my children, don't you?
Sean whispered in her ear, and was immediately taken by how red her face turned, as well as how tightly she clamped down on him. Pulling her tighter against him, as she tried to move away, he gave her neck a nip, stilling her.
Yes,
Roxy admitted in a soft voice, embarrassed.
I do.
Tell her you want them too, you idiot,
his lion suddenly spoke up, shocking the hell out of him.
I'm sorry,
Roxy said in a very small voice. Sean let his hand slide down her body and started to stroke her belly.
I'd like that too,
Sean admitted, and sent a mental raspberry to his lion, like he'd ever say no to Roxy. Suddenly he found himself being kissed rather enthusiastically, as Roxy had spun around in the blink of an eye. He would have complained about the pain of being dislodged so quickly and violently if it wasn't for the look in her eyes as she wrapped her arms and legs around him and held him tightly.
I love you, Sean Valence.
I love you too,
Roxy Valence. Sean smiled.
Fellowship Meeting. Bill rapped his knuckles on the table and looked around as everyone settled down quickly.
Ryan, you still haven't found a new alpha? Bill asked, surprised. It was going on 3 weeks now.
Ryan shook his head.
No one expected Michael to step down. We're still working things out. It hasn't exactly been pretty either. Why don't you just take over?
Oh, no, I don't want that mess, Ryan said, putting his hands up. I didn't even want this job, but Michael didn't give me much of a choice.
So, why are we here today?
Boris, the Tiger Clan's head, asked.
Is this about the attack on the sorceresses by Harkin's people?
Jorge, the Werebore head, asked.
No. But has everyone heard about that?
Bill asked, looking around the table. A couple of heads shook no.
Basically, they launched a full-out attack, had their lichens using silver weapons. It would have been a slaughter if Sean and my daughter hadn't been there, seeing as they're both immune now.
The key point, Roger, the old cougar, spoke up, is that they were suiciding their own lichens effectively, throwing away a lot of them in the attack.
Bill rapped his knuckles on the table again to stop the conversations around the table that immediately started up.
Look, we all know that the Ascendants are assholes and vicious bastards to boot, Bill sighed. I think our time to get fully involved in all of this isn't all that far away. Especially as I got this delivered to me this morning.
Unbuttoning his shirt, Bill reached inside and, grabbing the metal tag that his daughter had sent him, he pulled it off the lichen collar he was wearing and dropped it on the table with a dull metallic chiming noise for all to see.
Is that?
Claudia asked, leaning forward a little bit to look at it.
Yes, that's it, Bill nodded.
Does it work?
Yes, it works,
Bill said, and looked around the table. They all had that look on their face that gamblers got in the casinos when the 1,000-to-1 shot came in. Then, they cheered. Picking up the tag, Bill stuck it back on his collar and gave them a minute to celebrate before calling them to attention again.
So, he's making them now?
Clyde, one of the horse-lichen family heads, asked.
Yes and no, Bill told them. The letter my daughter enclosed told me that full production would be a while yet, but in response to what happened at the guild, Sean put his health on the line and turned out several hundred.
Several hundred? How? Jorge asked. How can anyone turn out several hundred items in a day or two?
Bill shrugged. I didn't ask. She told me two other things in the letter. The first is that you have to have a collar for these to work. The second is that they have 100 of them that they're willing to sell to us, with collars, for a price.
They're selling them?
Jeffrey, the head of all the bears in the state, said, looking a little upset.
I suspect that they have expenses, Bill said, staring at Jeffrey. And you don't have to buy them if you don't want them. When you consider what these things do, along with the necklaces, they could ask any price they want. We should be happy that they're asking for so little.
What's so little? Claudia prompted.
$2 million.
There were several outraged comments of, how dare they, and that's too much. Bill gave them another minute to wind down.
I'll pay it, Claudia said.
Hell, I'll pay it too, Roger said. That's only 20 grand apiece. Any one of us could resell one of those for $500,000, easily. And you all know it, he growled, looking around the room.
Remember when I asked for a list of people you had to have protected? Bill asked and looked around the table as they all nodded. Well, I want it tonight, by 6, with reasons why. I'll then decide how many each of you gets, and I'll expect you to pay accordingly. If you're not willing to pay, Bill looked at Jeffrey, who didn't look very happy right now at all, then don't send me anything. He's selling us a tag and a collar for that price. And you know that collars alone have been selling for 8 to 10 grand now.
Can you tell us how they work?
Claudia asked.
I haven't a clue, Bill said and shook his head. It's still metal. It's just no longer silver. Roxy warned me that if it comes in contact with too much, the shield effect moves off your skin and heats up. A lot. Enough to set things on fire.
That doesn't sound too bad.
As long as you don't go touching any silver, no. I picked up a 1-ounce bar this morning. Let's just say that the effect was educational.
I want at least 20.
Ted from the Leopard Clan spoke up suddenly.
I'll pay triple.
Why? Bill asked.
Why do you think? That acrobatic troop down on the strip has over a dozen of my people in it. With this, I can get them out of there, and hopefully nobody gets hurt in the process.
I want 20 as well, Claudia spoke up next.
Reason? Bill asked.
Because I have an 18-member strike team, with 2 helicopters that I can deliver in 15 minutes or less, anywhere in the Reno area. You sell me those, and I'll send them to anyone on the Fellowship who calls for help.
Someone has been planning for this, no?
Boris laughed.
From the moment I heard it was possible,
Claudia nodded. Bill nodded as well. He wasn't surprised. Claudia always thought ahead.
Okay. Meeting dismissed. Ted, we need to talk. I think I might just be able to help you pull it off without any violence. Everyone else, by 6.
Sawyer looked up from his desk as one of his helpers escorted Sean and Jolene in from the back entrance.
Well, if it isn't my favorite rabble-rouser, Sawyer said with a smile.
Hello to you too, Sean nodded, and set the bag he was carrying on the table. Jolene said you need more of these to sell? Sawyer nodded.
Yeah, the bottom fell out a little faster than I expected. Still, 8 grand ain't too bad. How many are in the bag?
60. Think that will keep you busy for now?
It'll work for now. I'll probably have them all sold by Wednesday.
Sean nodded, and reaching into his pocket, he pulled out 20 of the tags and dropped those onto Sawyer's desk next. What about these?
Holy!
Sawyer bent down to look at the metal tags and then back up at Sean.
Are those?
Sean smiled. Yep.
Marks!
Sawyer yelled.
Get your butt in here!
Sawyer looked at Sean.
How many more am I gonna get?
The supply is kinda limited right now, Sean admitted. But I'm working on it. Mark stepped into the room then.
What, boss?
Put this on,
Sawyer said, and picking up a tag, he handed it to Marks. Marks looked at it.
How do I...
Just touch it to the collar, Sean told him. Marks did so, and Sean heard the faint click.
How does it work?
Sawyer asked. It forms a shield along the surface of your skin. If silver touches the shield, it turns into rhodium. Too much, and the shield will heat up and expand.
So it just works by turning the silver into something else?
Sawyer looked impressed. Yep.
What's the range?
Sean took a moment to explain how the shield worked.
Interesting,
Sawyer said and pulled out a small coin.
Here, Marks, take this. Touch it to your skin.
Marks did, and they all watched as the silver changed shades.
It's not silver anymore, boss.
Sawyer laughed.
Oh, we're gonna make a fortune,
he said, rubbing his hands together.
Boss, what did I tell you about not ripping off family?
Who's gonna rip them off?
Sawyer laughed.
I'll just put them up for bid until the supply increases. You didn't complain about the necklaces, did you?
Mark shrugged.
You didn't go crazy on those.
And I won't on these either. Now get back to work.
Mark shrugged and reached up to pull off the tag.
No, leave that one,
Sawyer told him.
Things are gonna get crazy around here. You keep it. Just don't go touching any of the silver on me.
Marks nodded.
Thanks, boss,
and left the room.
I'm shocked, Sawyer, Jolene chuckled. You gave something away for free.
Yeah, go stick your finger up your ass, Joe. As soon as these hit the market, people are gonna start acting nuttier than they already are. I'm gonna have to sell them through a cutout, or this place is gonna be mobbed.
Not to mention the attention you'll get from the mages.
Exactly.
Sawyer nodded.
So is there anything else you need before I throw you out of my office? You just gave me a whole hell of a lot of work to do.
What's the word on the Ascendants? Jolene asked.
They're hunkering down for a fight. They figure Sean here is going to come after them for what they did to the Gals Guild.
What about their lichens? Sean asked.
No idea. I thought they'd try selling them off, so at least they wouldn't lose so much money when you went in there. But they weren't taking any offers.
You tried to buy them? Sean growled.
And I was gonna take the money out of your profits, too.
Sawyer laughed.
Cause who do you think I was gonna give them to?
Sean blinked. Really?
Of course. Buying things is always safer than fighting for them.
Sawyer winked.
Unless, of course, you can steal them.
Jolene snorted, but Sean noticed she was grinning. Anything else going on?
The besties appear to be digging in and gearing up. I think they expect to be next.
What about Sapientia?
Sawyer stopped a moment.
You know, they've been acting a little funny lately.
Funny? Sean perked up. How?
They're not digging in or building any extra defenses. They're not even looking for you. In fact, they've been doing business as usual, and I think they're having a dinner party this Friday night.
Well, that's different, Sean said, thinking about it.
You know, that's another curious thing that's going on, come to think about it,
Sawyer said, rubbing his chin.
What?
The Vesties are the only ones looking for you now. The Ascendants have stopped.
Well, maybe they're just waiting for Sean to hit them,
Jolene asked.
No, this isn't recent. They stopped over a week ago. It's like they're not even interested.
Well, that is curious.
So, when are you going to hit the Ascendants? I need to get my bet in with the pool.
Jolene sighed. People are betting on this?
Just us goblins? Well, some gnomes are placing some pretty big bets, too, I hear.
I don't know. We're still planning, Sean told him. Speaking of which, you wouldn't happen to have the plans to the buildings on their compound, would you?
Well, maybe if you could do your old pal a favor. I got 2 a.m. on Thursday night.
Sean sighed, and Jolene just rolled her eyes as she grabbed Sean's arm and steered him out of the office.
I'll see what we can do, but if you don't send us the plans for the place, I can guarantee you that we won't be doing it Thursday night, Jolene told him.
Later, Sawyer, Sean waved over his shoulder and let himself be pushed out of the room.
Now what?
Jolene asked Sean as they walked back to the van. Roxy and Dalen were keeping watch, just in case anyone showed up.
I need to talk to Chad.
Sawyer's right. We need to launch that attack, and soon. So we need to get Chad on board and have him start drawing up the plans for the attack. Plus, Sean smiled, I just want to see how he's doing after the change. Jolene nodded.
Sounds good.
Crossing Paths. Sal pulled up outside the shop. It was a small gaming store stuck in the middle of a busy interchange over in Sparks. From what he'd been able to figure out, they sold everything from video games to those stupid card games that the kids were all thrilled with these days. The place wasn't that old, from what he was able to learn. It had only been open for 2 years now. However, from the number of kids in the place, apparently business was brisk. Stepping inside, Sal looked around. He should have come earlier, before school had let out. All the kids in the place with their snacks really messed up all the scents in the place. Most of them were sitting around a couple of tables off to the side and playing one of those card games, though a few seemed to be doing something with small figurines. Sal shrugged. It wasn't like he cared. Off to the right, there was a second showroom, and walking into that, he was surprised to see racks and racks of video games. Old video games, some of which he remembered from back when games were new and everyone was interested in them, including him.
Can I help you, sir?
A young man asked, looking at him.
No, just browsing, Sal said, looking around the room.
Is there really that big of a demand for these old games?
The young man smiled.
Lots of folks in their 40s and 50s seem to buy them. Chad, my boss, even takes in old consoles and sends them out to be fit